I'm Oz and this is Jake.
Hello.
We just found a cache of weaponized gifts from the early 2000s and we're about to unleash them on Kurt Eichenwald.
You're in the damn woods.
That wasn't me.
You're in the damn woods.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Didn't you hear that? That was not me.
You're in the damn woods.
No, that's weird.
There it is again.
What the hell?
You're in the damn woods.
Okay.
You're in the Something's damn woods.
Is it the Mandela generator?
You're in the damn woods.
I don't know. I'm going to call our guy at Harp.
You're in the damn woods.
You're in the damn woods.
Get him on the line.
Hello.
You're in the damn woods.
Hey, Chris, can you check the Mandela generator real fast?
Oh, one moment. Damn it.
It's your boy's
Mandela generator. It's phase tuned. We've got the chemtrail generator going. We need to rephase tune the whole thing.
Oh, shit. God damn it.
30 seconds.
All right.
You're in the damn woods.
Welcome to episode 200 of The Damn Woods.
Celebrating 200 years of whatever this is.
Yep. So we have a special guest.
Very special guest, actually.
We've joked about this before.
Well, I mean, we joke about it a lot because it is kind of the headline conspiracy theory associated with Alaska. Like, big time, I would say.
We have one of the guys from HARP here, Chris.
Hello.
HARP director.
HARP director.
That's not true. But.
Officially, this is now the case.
Promotion.
You have declared it. There's now going to be a blood feud with the actual current director. You'll defeat him in single combat.
People on the internet say, I'm the HARP director.
Right. That's true.
So, yeah. I mean, clearly, if they say it online, it is absolutely true.
Absolutely. Or on the radio.
Nobody would put fake things on the internet. So, no. Chris, I need to know, first thing, why did HARP make my wife leave me?
Did you pay your HARP bill?
Oh, shit. that is probably it. I needed the mind control finally wore off because I didn't pay my bill in time.
I mean, I don't know what you want us to do. I mean, it wasn't running for a few years, so we can't stop all the bad shit from happening.
Oh, God.
If it's not running.
So we're not bullshitting you. Chris is actually a HARP employee.
He does actually work at the High Altitude Auroral Research Project.
High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program.
High Frequency. It's not a mind control device. It's not a weather control device. Contradict me if I'm wrong.
It's just a big radio transmitter.
That's it.
That's all it does. I mean, science can't prove that it can't do mind control. Weather control. But I don't know how to use it to do that either.
Right. Not yet.
If I could, that would be at least one or two papers.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the...
And that's what published. Published and peer-reviewed.
1 second. So if you could figure out how to use the array for mind control, your first instinct would be to publish papers on it.
Right, because the editors are jerks. Right? You know, the referees, they don't, you know.
So wait, would you mind control the editors?
Right.
Okay. So it's not just the scientific rate. You would actually use the mind control capabilities of it had you the option.
But only for good purposes.
Oh, yes.
For science.
Oh, of course.
Like getting white papers out clean.
Right. So I guess since we have you on the program, what's your line of research? What do you do with the array?
Usually I just turn it on and off. That's
awesome.
What are you doing when you turn it on and off? What are you seeking to see?
My first experiments were horribly complicated. I mean, so complicated that the maestro, the man who would actually create the program that would actually cause the thing to do what it does, he would basically... I'll curse my name in front of people because, you know, this file would have like 200 or 400 different entries. And I'm just some dumb student just said, hey, it'd be cool if you did all this pulsing and scanning and split the array in two and then things would break. And so it would take him all day and I'd get no science out of it. So then I just realized simple on off.
So
turn it on, turn it off, repeat. for hours at $5,000 an hour.
What are you looking to like when you're turning it on? What are you watching for? What are you monitoring?
Well, back when we had a UHF radar at the site, there's some things that we can infer from when HARP turns on. It makes the ionosphere a little bit more reflective in that wavelength. Otherwise, the UHF radar would just pass into space. But when HARP is modifying that part of the atmosphere, it makes it reflective, and so we would see like a reflection of some sort, and we can learn some things about the plasma processes, the plasma turbulence and waves and stuff that are being generated by HARP in that limited region. Since that radar needs about $1 million or $2 million to fix,
Jesus,
holy shit!
I've moved on to other lines of research, which includes artificial aurora, because you know you just need a sensitive low light camera, and if it's not sensitive enough, you just integrate for more time and see spots. And so we have some hypotheses of why the artificial aurora is brighter during certain operating modes and not in others. That isn't well understood. And when HARP was first built, it was, you know, the largest heater at the time, even when it was just a baby. And they turned it on and they didn't get airflow for a long time. And so it's like, oh, well, actually, if we point it along the magnetic zenith, then the sky just lights up like exploding space unicorns. And so, and then depending on which frequency you're using based on the ionosphere conditions, then sometimes we get, you know, bright gangbusting air glow, and sometimes we don't. And that's not well understood.
Right. And so for the benefit of our listeners here, aurora is typically caused by solar radiation hitting the ionosphere, hitting certain elements in the ionosphere, if I'm not mistaken. Feel free to correct me. And that, so, you know, coming from the sun, because it is a globe Earth and we can be called, you know, sphere cucks, all that the internet wants to.
I'll explain that in a second.
But, so, HARP can cause aurora basically emitting a similar type of radiation from the array up.
Right, well, the natural aurora is caused by high-speed electrons coming in from space, and the mechanism that accelerates those electrons from the sun and streams them down into the upper atmosphere at very high speeds. That process isn't well understood, but once those electrons are bombarding the upper atmosphere, it excites the atmosphere and makes the sky glow in the phenomenon that we see as the aurora. And the HARP artificial aurora isn't totally well understood, but one of the theories is that something about electromagnetic wave plasma interactions is also accelerating electrons in a limited region, maybe 50 kilometers wide and a few kilometers thick, and those electrons are then colliding with the neutral atmosphere or the rest of the atmosphere and making the sky glow. And when I say artificial aurora, you know, if you're actually down there, it would be kind of a letdown, because it's it's just a spot in the sky. And the brightest ones that we've managed to create have been just barely at the visible threshold. So it'd be at about as bright as the Andromeda Galaxy. And so you'd have to be know where to look, but you can't really look directly at it. You have to use averted vision. And then because, you know, it's 50 kilometers or 100 kilometers wide, but it's 200 kilometers in altitude. And so it would appear about the size, in angular size, as your thumbnail held at arm's length, basically directly overhead. So that is the artificial aurora.
Is a...
if you have a low-light telescope,
okay.
And then you get all these great little, I mean, literally exploding space unicorns. That is exactly what it looks like. I can't really be any more specific than that.
But without a low-light telescope, it is a slightly brighter patch about the size of your thumbnail that you can't look directly at. At its brightest.
At its brightest.
Okay. Duly noted.
Be wild. Afraid.
That's terrifying.
That's an incredible power.
That's the mind control just spot.
Could wear your hard hat, because those accelerated electrons are going to be...
When they come back to Earth, who knows what's going to happen?
Safety first.
So, you started at HARP before, after the handover? Because it's no longer a military installation.
Right. I started before the handover in 2008 as a graduate student.
Gotcha. Because, the reason, part of the reason, I would say, that HARP gets so much attention is because it was a a military project. They built this array doing their research, etc. And so it's this big, scary looking radio array out in rural Alaska that the military controls.
Or controlled.
Controlled. Right.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people realize, and I think conspiracy theorists kind of don't care or just don't realize, but that it's now owned by the University of Alaska. Like, it got transferred over.
Most of it.
Most of it.
Yeah, to transfer the land actually takes an act of Congress.
Oh.
And you know how fast that goes.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Congress, well, even at their fastest. But so it's still military land, but the equipment, the...
All the good stuff is ours.
Ah.
The chemtrail generators.
The chemtrail generators.
Right, of course.
Yeah. And, you know, there is some... Been wondering why does HAARP get associated with chemtrails, and one of the scientists there, that one of the famous scientists, I mean famous in this field of about 20, Paul out at the Naval Research Lab,
old Paul,
really quirky, amazing guy, and so his line of research is both ionosphere modification and through facilities such as HAARP. There's many. Several, not many, but several similar facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And his other line of research is blowing shit up in space, which is really cool.
I mean, launching
rockets. I mean, similar to what we do at Poker Flat with like TMA releases, we explode a canister of gas and see, and that gas will fluoresce, and so we can track it and see something about the winds in the upper atmosphere. And he used to be able to do burns on the space shuttle with their thrusters, and then using radar, see how that affected the upper atmosphere. Because the shuttle is flying through upper atmosphere, we think of it as empty space, but there's actually something there. It's
sure.
Flying in the ionosphere. And so Paul, you know, blessed Paul, he does HAARP, and he does chemical releases in the upper atmosphere. And so... So he takes credit for the chemtrail thing, and I think he's actually got a point. He's got some legitimate claim to causing all this, and so there's a conference coming up and on the RF Interactions workshop, and so Paul is helping to organize one of the sessions, and he says, we should have a combined ionosphere heating and chemical releases session, and it's like, oh, this is really funny. I know he's not trying to be funny, but this is... This is exactly how conspiracies get.
Oh my god!
Fed.
That's amazing.
Oh, that
were you at HAARP when the Jesse Ventura thing happened?
I was supposed to be there. Actually, the director of the Geophysical Institute asked me to go down. This was during the student campaign, so every year we had something called PARS, the Polar Aeronomy and Space, it's Polar Aeronomy and Radio Science program, and so students from Alaska and all over the states. Would come up with their advisors and tour Poker Flat and go to HAARP and do experiments. And we knew ahead of time that Jesse Ventura wanted to come down. And so Roger asked if I would, I don't know why me, you know, talk to Jesse Ventura.
Oh my God.
And this was, you know, I used to do PARS and go down quite frequently. It's a fun thing to do. It's an awesome experience. But I just happened to have a vacation to go visit my parents in Colorado. It's just like, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, darn.
I'm sorry. So, yeah, that whole thing, he flew his helicopter over the facility and to get his good pictures of the HAARP beam and stuff, which, mm-hmm. of course, were completely fabricated for television purposes. But his helicopter was real. And whenever an aircraft flies within 5 nautical miles of the facility, it automatically shuts down. For an abundance of caution, because, I mean, realistically, maybe if you're in, like, some sort of cloth-covered aircraft flying at, you know, 50 miles an hour directly above the facility, you might be in the beam long enough to have some sort of effect, but the FAA doesn't work like that, so it's classified as a munitions, you know, test facility, right. Or it was at the time, now it's something different. And so he ruined a bunch of student experiments. Because once you burn up that diesel fuel, you know, 600 gallons an hour, that fuel's burned up. It's gone. It's, you know, it shuts down, but the generators are still going. The generators don't shut off.
Oh, that sucks.
Fucking Jesse Ventura at it again.
You know,
God damn it.
He claims to be researching conspiracy theories, but the fact of the matter is he's out to fuck with grad students. in any scientific field.
Grad students, undergrad students. I mean, kids were crying, I heard.
Oh, he, my God.
You hear that, Jesse?
He made students cry.
Oh, my God.
So I do think he owes an apology.
Yeah, to, I would say so, honestly.
So if you can get him on your program, maybe 201 or 300.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're starting here. We're going to get Jesse Ventura next.
Yeah, that's the one.
Then okay. Alex Jones. We're going to get him. It'll be great.
Once we push up to the point where we're competing with InfoWars, that'll be the next level.
I think you're almost there.
Yeah. I think, you know.
I mean, we're no longer, we're not associated with the state in the way they are. So we've got an edge now. We're actually underground. We're not basically Fox News. No. The thing that I notice, and this is just from where I am on campus, in the police blotter, because those calls get routed to the university police, you occasionally see, like, a threatening call was made to HARP, and, you know, there's basically no investigation the cops can do. It's like, okay, cool, you reported it to us. What type of reactions do you get from the public? Like, do you guys field phone calls that are people like, we know what you're up to, that type of thing?
Well, that's interesting. I haven't read the police blotter because I've been hearing about these phone calls. And I personally do not get very many. Any, actually.
Ah.
And during the last campaign, or the first university-operated campaign, I really put my name out there trying to engage with the ham radio community. It's like, hey, we're turning on the world's biggest radio. Listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and send reports, right? And so it kind of just blew up on Twitter.
I saw those.
And it was just, I wasn't planned for the response. And so I got, probably about 10,000 people were actively engaged with this. And out of the hundreds upon hundreds of emails and tweets and things back to me that I still have to go through and catalog and all that kind of stuff, maybe one was legitimately tinfoil hat.
Wow.
The two or three, I couldn't tell whether they were ironically tinfoil hat.
That is the risk these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not hard to find me, you know, but my contract, I have to have my name. I'm searchable in EDR. I have office hours. So the tinfoil hat crowd, if they can use the people.uaf.edu or LASA, whatever, mm-hmm. You know, they can find me and call me up, and I don't get those phone calls. But they do apparently go to the somewhere on campus. And for the most part, we just ignore them, but there are apparently some disturbed people on the planet.
Yeah.
And particularly the ones that I think that the university really concerned were the people in Georgia that basically stockpiled a bunch of ammunition and weapons and methamphetamines and wanted to drive from Georgia to Alaska.
Oh,
you know, step one, get a bunch of drugs and guns.
Step that's two, how all our plans start.
So. Step two, to be determined. Step three, blow up HARP.
Oh my God!
But that caused some real concern, and so since then, I get in trouble if I joke about conspiracy theories because there's a bit of a logical lapse. The belief in conspiracy theories means mental illness, which I don't agree with.
No,
but there are some very mentally disturbed people that latch on to. Oh,
absolutely. These thank God. I'm just wondering what the set of logical leaps there is. It's like, okay, we want to blow up HARP. We've concluded we want to go and blow that up.
We're going to have to get there quick.
We got to get there.
So let's get the amphetamines.
We should probably go in one trip. Like, we don't want to stop along the way.
That's how they get you.
So we'll get some meth, and we'll be able to just go the whole way. You know, one trip, make it real, real fast.
Drive on up to Dakota.
Yeah, just some empty water bottles, you know. And
we got to drive from Georgia to Kokona, okay? Like, that's...
It's, wait, step one, where is Kokona?
Yeah, got to find it on the map. All right, I think it's here. Friends. Oh, my God. Oh, boy. That is... Yeah, I guess I'm not shocked by it, but I do still kind of wonder, like... Because I've seen a lot of different theories, like... It's weather control. I think the first one, the first really big circulated one, that was that it's weather control. And I, you know, what you describe, somebody without a deep scientific background, I certainly don't have one, could say, oh, well, they're adjusting the reflectivity of the atmosphere. And they make the leap like, they're going to make it rain in China, like, or something like that.
And it does heat up the atmosphere. It does heat up the upper atmosphere.
Right.
And but you have to remember that this is the upper atmosphere where George Clooney and Sandra Bullock are floating, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, in gravity. There's nothing there. There's literally, I mean, there's something there, but not much. I mean,
extremely thin atmosphere. And how many degrees increase are we talking?
Thousands of Kelvin, up to thousands of Kelvin.
Okay. So.
But if you were up there, like, you know, just, you know, in your shorts or whatever, and you flew through this region, you'd still be like, oh shit, I'm in a vacuum. It's freezing to death. Right. It's kind of like the difference between grabbing a hot frying pan or putting your finger on a hot frying pan versus having a cigarette butt put up out on your skin. Like, there's a lot of heat capacity in one, but not in the other. There's just not much energy there. And the radio waves are really quite weak by the time they get to that region that your cell phone is, I mean, literally millions of times more powerful. And that's what I would be concerned about, is the cell phone that's a million times more powerful
than HARP. Jesus.
And we hold that right next to our head. And when I say a million times more powerful, that's a million times at 1 meter's length.
That is baffling.
And so what is it doing to your brain? I think that's where the mind control is.
That's where it comes in. It's obviously a much more efficient design.
It certainly explains why I shitpost constantly on Twitter. It's because I have brain illness from holding my cell phone near my head. That's what's going on.
HARP was a false flag. It's been AT&T all along.
HARP is in your pocket.
HARP is secretly, it's not the big array. It's the little array.
Oh,
should have been paying attention to it the whole time.
Well, yeah, and I've always been curious about why the conspiracy theories have focused on just HARP. It's not the first facility. We had one in Platteville, Colorado. That was the first one, the first official one that I know of, just down the road from where I grew up. And then the Russians built one, Sura, and also IceCat in Scandinavia. Arecibo had one, and then Hurricane Andrew took it out, and then they're building another one. So there's been other facilities, and so I say, well, what about these others? And then
crickets.
Well, no, that now everything is HARP. Everything that is a phased array radio antenna.
God,
you know, a bunch of these little cross dipole antennas, and so the reason why we have these cross dipole, what we call phased array antennas, is they're electronically steerable by changing the phase of the. They're basically like, it's 360 independent radio transmitters is basically what HARP is. 180 of those masts, and each of those masts has two antennas, and each of those is a separate radio transmitter. And by having those operating in concert or in sequence, the beam can be straight up or to the side, or Paul Bernhardt's twisted beam, all sorts of cool stuff. And it can be steered on the order of microseconds from one part of the sky to the other. And so this sort of technology is being used all over the place now for radars, because it's inefficient to move a big dish. And so the military uses this for their radars. Commercial applications use these too. But now, whenever you have something that even looks a little bit like HARP, it's HARP.
HARP's up to it again.
Yeah,
it's good branding.
It is an extremely strong brand.
No argument there.
I mean, like, do the other radio arrays have good, like, names like HARP? HARP is, I mean, it's a word. HARP is a word.
Well, okay, so we have the radar out of Poker Flat, the Poker Flat Incoherent Scatter Radar. Some people say Pfizer. Others might say Pisser, depending on... Christ. So, no, that one is not quite as good. The general name for that brand of radars, which is 446 megahertz, or in that region, is AMISR, the Advanced Modular Incoherent Scatter Radar.
That sounds a little scary, but HARP is, I mean, like, HARP, it's a known brand.
You think of a musical instrument, but it's also kind of a spacey musical instrument that not a lot of people play. It's a little bit sinister seeming, you know. And I have seen that. There you go. The line of thinking too, because there's weather control was the first one. There's one now about it causing earthquakes somehow with a radio array pointed up. You cause earthquakes, but that they're positioned around the globe in such a way to be able to do so. So those other arrays are getting attention, but they're just associated with HARP.
Yeah. Oh, they, and they can operate in concert. So to, you know,
yeah.
They can't. I mean, they operate on different parts of the atmosphere, and they can't see each other. in any reasonable sense, aside from a very weak signal can bounce, you know, along the ionosphere in the ground from one place to the other.
Sure.
But it's so weak. I mean, it's weaker than commercial radio broadcasts. So, right. I mean, it's like not that scary. But you know, with a lot of the conspiracy theories, there's often an element of truth that perhaps I would like to think maybe inspired the conspiracy theory, but maybe not. But yeah. But there's actually active research, particularly in Taiwan, by scientists that are looking for ionospheric precursors to earthquakes, meaning that we have this data that we can measure of the ionosphere from GPS satellites and other means, and they like to, or they have the idea that when there's an earthquake, there's an indication in this data before the earthquake happens.
Hmm.
Huh. And so that they see it, but the problem with the science is that there's a big earthquake, and then you look through all the data and you look for a wiggle that happened before the earthquake. And so how can you you have a correlation between a wiggle before an earthquake, but is that a causal relationship?
Yeah. Right. And I mean, furthermore, is it easily distinguishable from another thing that would cause that type of a signal change?
Yeah, just
in
random
the
noise.
Atmosphere.
Yeah. Just some blip, some cloud, a plasma cloud.
Yeah. So, oh God, that is, again, there's so many lines of thinking that people have. And it's, again, people without a scientific background attempting to interpret a thing and then like, oh, well, that seems like it could be really sinister and really scary, but.
And I don't know whether to be jealous of some of these people or not, because they live in this mystical world where dragons and things still exist.
Literal reptilians.
With literal reptilians, I think, oh my gosh, what a colorful world you must live in.
Exciting time.
Exciting time, yeah. If this big radio can actually do these really cool things. I shouldn't say cool, but, you know, nefarious things. Yeah. That's really interesting. That's the stuff of books and fiction. Mm-hmm. But then again, you know, I also feel bad because they don't understand radio. And basically none of us understands radio. Well, I mean, a few people don't. Most people don't.
We've been doing this podcast for 200 episodes. And we don't fucking understand radio.
Yeah, it's magic. It's magic. But
the sorcerer casts a spell and it comes to my car.
That's how it works.
But, you know, Carl Sagan would say something along the lines of, you know, through science we've learned that the universe is not only I'm probably going to screw this up, but the universe is not only as strange as we can imagine, but it's actually stranger than we can imagine, and that's what science has brought us. But you have to go through a lot of years of hard work and study and math, and you know, much people like math.
Oh yeah, well-loved hobby, math.
people really love
fucking
math.
All over it. Kids, you gotta catch them doing math in the fucking dark.
Yeah.
Shit.
Oh.
You gotta tell them to go to bed.
Jesus.
Now, there's a reason I'm studying literally how to put words in the right order. Like, my brain is not, it's not geared for numbers or for science or any of that shit. It's like, I can make words good. That's my entire line of study. So
words good I make, right?
Words good I make. Put it on the paper. Sold. Oh man, what was there was some line on this that I was thinking of, because there's the earthquake thing, there's the I mean, radio is, it is a mystical and hard to understand force in just a wide variety of ways, from the fact that we carry these transmitters in our pocket that can, from a distant server, pull information just over the air and then it's there for you, I mean, even just atmospheric effects. I've a couple different times been out at night, typically in the summer, and the conditions are just right that you can catch a radio station, FM on occasion, more typically AM,
right, sure,
skipping from somewhere else that's miles and miles away that you shouldn't actually be able to get signal from, like anywhere from Anchorage to even the lower 48 on occasion. Yeah.
Yeah. And HARP transmits actually in between the AM band and the FM band.
Ah, so shouldn't you really pick up a bowl?
Yeah. And people used to listen to shortwave radio, so mm-hmm. Which would go, you know, halfway around the world or sometimes all the way.
Oh yeah. I mean, shortwave is still like not as many people use it, but you can catch broadcasts out of the Middle East, out of England. Like it just,
yeah,
I guess it reflects well.
It reflects off the ionosphere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially at night. During the day, it tends to get absorbed in the upper atmosphere. At night, it tends to reflect, just broadly speaking. We're in an interesting time where shortwave used to be a lot more important than it was, and AM radio used to be a lot more important than it was. And you'd tune in and you'd hear these atmospheric effects and things fading in and fading out and stuff like that. But now, in this day of this thing called the internet, you know, we can listen to radio stations all over the world in perfect clarity, except for buffering. And so it's like, so people are saying a lot of these shortwave radio stations are being shut down. They're operated by the government for propaganda purposes, for example. And that's sort of unfortunate, because radio is really important and getting people involved and understanding some of these things that, you know, what happens if the cell phone networks go out, say, in Alaska? We're screwed.
Yeah.
Oh, you know? Super fucked. I mean, Alaska is the clearest example of that. The reliance on the internet up here is very efficient in making it seem like we're part of the States. And I think I've talked about this on the show before, but 06, there was, I think one of the providers' fiber line was down for maintenance. They were routing their traffic through the other fiber line, which got severed by a road crew accidentally. And suddenly, credit cards didn't work, long-distance phone calls didn't work, cell phones didn't work. Like, you could make a landline call to somebody else in town on a landline, and that was pretty much it. Internet was just gone completely. Like, I was playing WoW at the time. Our guildmates thought we were dead. Like, the Alaskans just vanished off the face of the planet, and there was no way to actually contact them and be like, actually, everything's fine.
They finally left the country.
There was no way to do so. We couldn't email them. We couldn't call them long distance.
You could put a letter in the mail.
You could have put a letter in the mail. That's true. But we probably would have. They would have received it by the time we got back.
Yeah.
But,
if they checked their physical mail.
Yeah, if they checked their physical mail.
And the Good Friday earthquake is another example of that.
Oh, yeah.
Severed telephone connections. And basically the main form of communication between Alaska and the lower 48 was relays by ham radio operators for several days.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's still an immensely useful technology. It's just others are more convenient, more prevalent.
Yeah, right. And so in some ways we have less understanding of how it works, or many students and people have less understanding of how it works, yet now we carry around, you know, like four radios in our pocket. That phone has like literally four radios.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Three or whatever
it is. Cellular, GPS.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, just tons of them. It's a fascinating era, and I can see why, well, especially without the, you know, if you're listening to AM and to shortwave frequently, you might catch atmospheric effects and be like, oh, okay, something must be happening up there that's causing this. If you're disconnected from that, if you're only getting your feeds through data, which is either on or not, like that's kind of the way data works, then you're not noticing those effects, and thus you have less understanding of them, as you're saying. So
right, and there's other larger sort of geopolitical things about, say, if we wanted to broadcast messages into countries that restrict access to information, China, North Korea. I mean, people can buy radios, or people have radios, or they can build radios.
Sure.
And it's a way of listening to things without that activity being cataloged.
Yeah. Yeah. Broadcast in the air, nothing, like there's no ISP to record it, no intermediary. It's just, hey, look, here's the signal. Just tuned to the right number.
I mean, that was pirate radio's thing for a long time.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
It'd be an interesting thing. I mean, I'd be interested to see with like crackdowns, like especially with China, right? China does the Sesame Credit thing now.
Is
implementing Sesame Credit. You remember that?
We've talked about it on the show a little bit before, but it's a means of social control, by gamifying support of the state.
Yeah, support of the party specifically.
Yeah, so you have this app. If you post a controversial opinion or something that goes against the official line in Beijing, anything like that, if you're late on like your rent payments, anything of that sort, your score goes down. Whereas if you say things in support, your score goes up. If you pay your things on time, et cetera.
Oh, lovely.
And
it's wild.
If your friends associated with you through the service do negative things, it impacts your score. So it encourages everybody to, like, if somebody's like, oh, I don't like the government, you're encouraged to basically cut off contact or socially pressure them to improve, because they're tying this to things like
your
loan applications and things like that.
What is this called? Skynet?
Sesame. If only. No, it's. I wish it had an automated component, because at least an automated component can be predicted. In this case, it's operated by the party and entirely social pressure. And so to be able to get outside ideas into a place like China where there is that social pressure, yeah, it has to be through a means that can't
be monitored.
They're
not tracking. Yeah. Like shortwave, stuff like that. That's cool. That's actually kind of a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to see like a pirate radio scene rising up in China.
That would be super cool.
Well, you know, I have not attempted to propose my North Korea experiments.
You hear that, Kim Jong-un? You better watch out. He's going to turn the array on you.
Going to send some music your way.
Oh, God.
24-hour stream of the Insane Clown Posse directed in North Korea. No one in North Korea knows what the fuck to do.
You won't know that it's taken effect until the party leaders come out in clown makeup publicly. And say that they are now part of the Dark Carnival. Like, what the fuck?
A large rift has formed between the official party and the new Dark Carnival.
Jesus Christ.
Christ on sale.
Oh, God.
That's nuts. Yeah. That's an interesting thing. We have a few listeners who are ham people.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I mean, it's a fascinating hobby. I kind of wish I played around with it more. There are a couple sites you can go to now where... And I don't fully understand how they work, but basically it's a digital interface for a ham radio outfit.
A software. Well, there's a couple things. They have remote controlled ham stations. So if you want to use because ham equipment is kind of expensive. If you want to do HF or that takes a big antenna, and I couldn't do that where I live.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy time and operate that equipment. There's also a lot of internet software defined radios that let you. It's a radio somewhere, and you can tune it to whatever frequency or multiple frequencies, and multiple people can be using it at the same time.
That is super cool.
That's and neat. So during this last HARP campaign, I pretty much jammed up all of those. Because people were, it's like, oh, if you don't have your own radio, go to these sites, and they have limits of 4 or 6 users.
Watch this get taken out of contact. HARP director jams radio signals across the planet. Preventing access. But
people resorted to YouTube.
No, that is like really, really cool. Cause I mean, among other things, cause you've got propaganda outfits, over shortwave, things like that. What is it? Radio America or something like that is broadcasting with the intent of reaching East Asia with things that are not approved. Also the Middle East.
Yeah. Presenting the American side of news.
Precisely. But then you also have, especially on ham radio bands, accessible by ham radio, which I guess is in the same frequency range, ?
Yeah, I mean, there's several bands for ham radio, mm-hmm. And there are some ham bands in the middle of the bands that HARP can transmit on, and mm-hmm. we are absolutely not allowed to transmit in the ham bands. If we did, then ham radio operators would probably storm the site and burn it down.
Dozen of people.
Dozens of people. Driving up to Alaska.
There are dozens of us. But in that same frequency range, number stations tend to operate, and those are still a thing. And I think
number stations are usually shortwave.
We
actually use them typically for some of our other conspiracy show intros. We use number station clips and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've looked into that. So I'm kind of curious, what
they're weird.
They're weird. What are they all about?
Well,
that's kind of the attraction to it.
That right. is because it's impossible. Like, there's some code book somewhere that presumably
someone hears.
Okay, I hear these characters. That means this. Do something, but they're operated frickin' everywhere, by tons of different governments who all disavow any involvement in them. And it's absolutely fascinating. And on a ham radio set, you can pick those up and hear the chimes that they're doing, and then the
weird broadcast or whatever,
the whatever letters they're reading, etc.
There's actually I think Internet Archive actually has a number station archive section.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty interesting. There's it's prevalent enough that people have given them names.
Oh yeah,
so there's the Lincolnshire Poacher is actually one I use. It's the do 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 do.
Oh one? Yeah. Well, the very interesting thing too is that ham radio operators who get really dedicated to it, who really get into the whole number station thing,
they've found, like, they're able to triangulate, okay, it's broadcasting from here, and they find the facility, which is, of course, like, fenced off and, you know, not accessible to anybody, but it's like, huh. So it's just kind of out here.
It's a powered station, and yeah, that's it, and there's
just,
no people.
Just transmitting. Transmitting what?
Because they've been around.
I would love to get an NSF grant to just broadcast 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42 on repeat. You know, the number's from Lost. I mean, that's probably... and see if anybody notices, but I'm having trouble getting intellectual merit and broader impact.
Yeah, that's going to be a struggle.
Difficult proposal
to write. That's the one.
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that Cheeto Mussolini is going to divert all NSF funding to figuring out how to make his tan look realistic. So
yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, unless you can sell it on that. You might be able to make an argument for that. Like, what if radio signals will make your tan look realistic, Mr. President, and then it from there.
But in the musical portion of the experiment, which should have a scientific purpose for reproducing the Luxembourg effect, where, you know, you're transmitting on two frequencies and they get mixed in space. Right, so if you tune your radio to one frequency or the other, you should only hear the programming on one frequency, not the other. But with the Luxembourg effect, if one of the stations or both of the stations is so powerful and they're reflecting from the same region in the ionosphere through certain processes, the amplitude modulation from one gets imposed on the amplitude modulation of the other.
Whoa.
So you're hearing a combination of both.
That's wild.
Amplitude modulation on one frequency, or in this case, both. And so I had a friend that, you know, I did telephone tones, DTMF tones. And so I just do alternating tones and then to see if you could hear the effect, and then do a combination of those tones to make a chord, which you'd only hear if the Luxembourg effect was present.
That's so then fucking
wild. I had a friend compose some music. I tried this a couple years ago, and it did succeed, but I had some art and music students from UAF composed some music for this. And I tried to, you know, I said, hey, you know, this is what I'm trying to do, and, you know, it's kind of complicated, it's hard to explain, and they came up with this incredibly complicated, noisy jazz sort of thing that you couldn't really tell whether the effect is there or not, because nobody understands jazz either. That's another that's another mystery.
Yet another conspiracy.
And so I feel a little bit bad, because on the All Things Considered interview, I was talking about this, and I said, well, in retrospect, for the music, I probably should have done something simple, like row, row, row your boat. You know, and do that in rounds. And so I had a friend that composed, like, three little pieces of music, like one or two pieces, that took advantage of the Luxembourg effect. So two different tracks, and so they each stood alone individually, but to get the entire musical piece, you had to, the Luxembourg effect had to be present. And so in one of those tracks, you call it the dance track, one of the beats is actually Morse code that encoded the like my call sign for ham radio, and then Harp's call sign.
Jesus Christ. And
we were curious to see whether anybody would pick up on this. And what we found is that the Italians were fascinated during this campaign. You know, most, when I was tracking the internet hits and the Twitter hits and stuff, it's like, where are they coming from? Mostly the States, but the next most interested country was Italy. And I haven't figured this out yet. Years ago, it used to be Serbia and Croatia. And it's because that's where Tesla was from. And so they have this running heated debate about who owns Nikola Tesla.
And, God.
And Harp, of course, is based on Tesla technology, like every other radio on the planet.
Right.
Alternating current and all these sorts of things. And so I would stir the pot and say, well, you know, actually Tesla isn't Croatian and he's not Serbian. He's actually American. Because,
throwing shade.
I could just stir that pot.
Fucking our Serbian listeners are going to be pissed.
I haven't figured out the Italian connection yet, though. But they, I got some listening reports, and they pulled out, like, the call sign for, I think it's my call sign or the call sign for Harp or whatever in this broadcast. And I just looked at the visual aspect of it and was like, hey, you cracked the code. Congratulations.
Oh, God.
Well, no, but it turned out that somebody else was doing Morse code talking about Harp and about this thing. And they recorded that.
Oh, my God.
And
what?
So it's like, I got hoaxed by my own experiment.
That's beautiful.
I still owe him a postcard.
God, it's fucking cool.
I gotta say, like, the whole, like, if you want, hey, high concept musical artists, like, if you can't get your shit, like, your two separate tracks broadcast on a high-altitude radio array and then mixed by the Luxembourg effect.
In space.
In space. You might as well space. Just fucking go home. Like, yes, why are you even an artist?
Yeah, all right.
Get the fuck out. You've been topped at this point.
So if you know anybody that has, you know, $5,000 an hour, we would love to. And there's got to be a few people that have that kind of money.
Well, that leads me to a natural question, and it's a little weird for us to get properly journalistic on this program.
Very weird.
Mostly it's us shouting.
Yeah.
Well, you are going to edit out all the secret stuff I've mentioned.
Right. Well, of course. Yeah. All the top secret stuff. They're not going to hear any of that.
No.
Listeners, sorry. All the really top secret stuff. All the cool, like, mind control shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you aren't going to have heard any of that.
We had to pull that.
Yeah. Sorry, we pulled that section. But
for God's sake.
So, as everybody in this room knows, the state is fucked. Like, Alaska is fucked. Like,
one way to put it.
Financially speaking, and
way to put it.
I'm a pessimist on this, but I'm fairly certain that Alaska's basically going to be Alabama in about a decade. Like, we're
hell yeah.
We're not going to figure out financing, and things are just going to kind of go to shit.
That is the message our college president is saying.
Yeah,
our university president is saying is that
yes,
right
is.
Now oil is keeping salaries high without education. And he has a graph that says, well, you know, we can either move things to the right, that is, increase education and keep the incomes high, or we're going to be Alabama.
There you go.
Jesus.
He's over here reading out of my fucking playbook.
But don't look fucking at the correlation cheating. Coefficient.
In any case, though, the point I'm getting hit to here is, you know, the HAARP transferred from the military, which has, you know, depending on who you ask, effectively an unlimited budget, to the university, which has, by default, an extremely limited budget. Like you cited earlier, a radar array, a specific radar that, was it $2 million to fix anyway?
Yeah, $2 million, yeah. So we have to write a proposal to the federal government. You know, this university doesn't even stock projector light bulbs, you know, because on the off chance that the projector fails, you don't want to have all these extra light bulbs around for the
Jesus Christ.
And so it takes a week if a projector fails to get that replaced in the
and so
that's how tight things are.
So then what is what's the future for the array? Like, especially in this environment of, at least on the state funding side, total jeopardy.
Uncertain, and it isn't really getting any state funding.
It's mostly federal still?
The statewide administration loaned the Geophysical Institute about, I think it was around $2 million, like startup funds. Mm-hmm. It has to get paid back. I mean, 5% interest, I don't know what the terms are, but and so that will allow us to operate for a certain length of time, probably through next summer. Mm-hmm. Not this summer, but the following summer.
Okay.
But in the meantime, we're trying to encourage scientists to write proposals to, you know, put HAARP time into their proposals. And basically, mm-hmm. we have to sell about 600 hours per year of HAARP time to break even. And we'd like to sell more than that so we could fix the place up again. But that's more
or less
listeners
who wanted to buy some HAARP time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. I mean, I don't see any reason why we couldn't do a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter. You know, and you know, at certain levels we get to you know, you get to send a tweet out via HAARP or something like that.
Jesus.
Or, you know, again, big, rich, famous musicians that have money to burn, not that they ever waste their money.
Oh, no, they never do that.
This would be a great thing to waste their money on.
There you go. Premiere your song
on HAARP.
Via HAARP.
Yep.
There you go. That's a free one for you out there. You want to make a big splash.
I mean, it's not free.
Because
the idea is free.
The idea is free. You're going to have to pay Chris over here for the HAARP time. But the
me personally.
Yes. No,
$5,100 per hour.
Write the check to cash.
By the way, every hour of HAARP time comes with a free T-shirt.
Hey,
oh, shit.
There you go.
This is how we're incentivizing.
That's how you get them.
You know, this isn't the DoD anymore.
Right. Pay to play exclusively at the secret radar facility. I mean, there was a band fairly like big in music circles, not really big overall, but big in music circles that premiered a song on the campus radio station. Like, they contacted the campus radio station, like, hey, we're going to do our world premiere on your station. Can you play this MP3 at this time? And it was like, okay, cool. So take that a step further. I'm just saying, premiere your song over HAARP.
Yeah.
people with shortwave radios are going to listen in on that, and then
With or without the Luxembourg effect, it's just wave file inputs and
shit.
we could brought. There's our
that's the next tier in the kitten on the Patreon.
Yeah, when we hit 5,000 a month,
yeah.
We will pay to play one of our episodes out over harp. There you go, listeners.
Shit. Yeah.
Tell your friends.
Groundbreaking. Fucking top that, Chapo. Jesus.
We're gonna get that fucking t-shirt too while we're at it. I mean, gotta have it.
Yeah, so God's sake. One t-shirt, you'll have to work that out.
Well, okay, you know, we'll fight over it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Pause real quick here. What are we looking at for time?
About an hour.
Okay.
We can probably kill it.
Yeah. Wrap this up.
Okay. So, thank you, Chris, for coming on. This has actually been a substantially weird episode of our show.
Excellent. Thank you. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Saying all the secret stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
of course.
Secrets,
we
got to bleep a lot of it out.
I'm keeping that under our hat.
And we'll blank your minds.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Don't worry. We're used to that.
Hit the array. We won't remember anything. That's how it goes.
Push the big red button.
Target these people.
Yeah. The Dan Woods and Nick Begich.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I forgot the command. It's actually, you know, more Linux commands.
it's all command line shit out there.
And God damn it.
H doesn't stand for help. It stands for high voltage. Or it used to. Until somebody hit H. At the wrong time.
Jesus.
Oh, God.
So you can check us out Wednesday for another conspiracy episode, actually.
Yeah.
Kind of a groundbreaking week because it's 200. So mm-hmm. Why not do two of our weird-ass episodes?
Celebrating 200 years.
200 years of the Damn Woods. Backers, check out Thursday. Actually, backers get these early Monday and Tuesday. Sunday and Tuesday.
Yep, and then their special super secret episode on Thursday.
Super secret politics only episode. Mm-hmm. My God, shocking, groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Friday for the Dick Kick. That's our Let's Plays.
Yep.
Thank you for listening, backers. Thank you for contributing.
Are you tired of getting fucked and not enjoying it? Join the Daedalus Initiative. The Daedalus Initiative. Go fuck yourself, because it's the only way to be sure you are getting fucked correctly.
Real quick, shout out to one of our other backers, Gab, out of the mean streets of Canada.
Toronto, Canada.
Toronto, Canada, or nearby. So Gab is, she's a longtime listener, one of our backers.
Friend of the show.
Patreon.com/PillCruncher. She's a writer. She's a YouTuber. Go check her out. If you like her stuff, give her money. You know, usual stuff. Mm-hmm. Now we capitalism around here.
We extremely capitalism. And she's doing some profit sharing.
She is. Oh, yeah.
Every $10 up she gets at her Patreon.
She's giving us more money for some reason.
$2 more for whatever goddamn reason.
She's
so.
Canadian. That's why. That's what it is.
damn socialists.
They're too polite.
I mean, we're going to accept the money.
We never turn down money.
In any case, yeah, check her stuff out.
Check her stuff out. She's an interesting lady. She's a good writer. She writes for C4SS.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, some of our listeners are familiar with that. Anyhow, thank you for listening. Goodbye. I love you.